Hey folks, Jeff here. Welcome to a special episode of The Left Show. In these midweek supplementals, I'm trying to interview as many candidates as I can before the 2026 election. In this series, I'm attempting to talk to as many of the Democratic candidates in Utah as I can who are running for Utah's newly redrawn Congressional District 1. I've sent invitations to as many candidates as I can to join me in what should be the friendliest interview they've ever had. Who are they? What do they stand for? Are they centrist corporate Democrats or left-leaning progressives with a vision to improve the lives of the American people? On a larger scale, I'm also sending invites to candidates all across the country. I want to talk to as many folks as I can who want to change things for the better, who believe in a larger tent, and believe that the American people are more important than the corporate donor class. I hope you enjoy these conversations, learn a thing or two about the people running to represent you, and I appreciate your attention to this matter.
Pick a window.
The Left Show is not intended for youngsters. It's not intended for the sensitive. It's certainly not intended for right-wingers. Use your own discretion. Awful swearing.
You know who the best-looking person sitting up there was? Who was it with the cowboy hat?
No, J.M. Bell.
J.M. Bell. Mm-hmm. I don't know who that is.
He hosts a podcast.
Well, he was good-looking.
You pompous, stuck-up, snot-nosed, giant, twerp, scumbag, fuck-faced, dickhead, asshole!
Gentlemen, this is Democracy Manifest.
For what reason? What is the charge? Eating a meal? A succulent Chinese meal?
Joining me today, a candidate for Congressional District 1 in Utah, run for the primary, which is this June, Michael Farrell. Hey, buddy. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Hey, Jim. I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me on.
No. I've been playing in Utah politics since the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And so I know a lot of the names and players of, let's call it, our more corporate leaning Democrats.
Yeah.
And some of you newer, younger guys are really impressing me. And so what I want to do is maybe just chat for a minute. I've got five questions for you, but first do me a little favor and kind of give me your elevator pitch. Give me your introduction for listeners that may not know you yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Who I am, why me? So again, thank you so much for having me on. I'm Michael Farrell. I am a 37-year-old tax attorney. I'm a first-time candidate for any kind of elected office. I have wanted to be in public service for a while now. The reason that I went to law school was the drive to get into elected office and change the broken laws that we're all, suffering under. To give you a brief but very dark story, when I was 21, my mom got sick, and she was a waitress, and she missed, 5 days of work. She got fired. Hmm. She lost her health insurance. And then, because we live in a terrible system where there's no actual safety net to help people.
Yeah.
And so we took her to the hospital, and while we're there, they run a bunch of tests and the bill is racking up. We leave with a $150,000 hospital bill and a terminal diagnosis. So she spent the last 6 months of her life with that, sword of Damocles hanging over her head. And that was, I was actually finishing up my undergraduate degree at UCLA at the time when she got sick. And I essentially dropped out my senior year. I disenrolled because they told us she had at most 6 months to live. So I was like, okay, whatever. I can finish school later, but yeah, she won't be here. So I I ate so much Carl's Jr. because that was what we did. I would go and get, Carl's Jr. We'd eat. I had to feed her. She was losing mobility. Anyway, but more about me. But so I saw this happening. I saw the system crushing her, and nobody giving a shit. And I was like, who am I? Who cares? Nobody cares about me. I'm just this insignificant spec. This hospital, this insurance company, or not insurance, the hospital, was chasing us for $150,000 bill until she died. Then she passed away, and they offered to settle the entire bill for $40. And I was like, what, is that like postage? What? So I was like, I need to go. I keep voting for people who are going to change the world and are going to help ordinary people out.
Right.
And nobody's doing it. So I was like, I have to go to law school. I have to learn these laws. I have to figure it out myself and hold my beer basically. Like if no one's going to do it, I'm going to do it. So I was 21 and I was like, I'm going to go to law school. I'm going to learn this stuff. I'm going to run for office and I'm going to change these laws. And obviously goes without saying, I support single payer healthcare because I think the system that we have, the health insurance system we have, is just absolutely crushing ordinary people.
No, I remember when, Obamacare was still in its infancy and they were pushing it forward. And we had Democrats like Jim Matheson who voted against it. My personal thing is pre-existing conditions. And if Obamacare did nothing else, getting rid of pre-existing condition discrimination was the most important for me because I'm a mess. And so
we live our lives and things happen. And then it's like, now you're cursed. Now you're screwed. Good luck.
Yeah. So let's do this. Let's hit some questions.
Yeah.
I have a neighbor outside revving his motorcycle. I don't know if you can hear it, but there's nothing I can do about my neighbors.
It's just cool background.
It can be. If it was a street bike with a glug, 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 I'd be more happy than if it's a ween, 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 which is what it is. So, which I believe are the technical terms for those motorcycles. So you're proposing policies. Your issues page is like a wish list of stuff that I care about. So this is going to be a friendly interview. And if anybody's looking for some sort of hard hitting question, I see nothing to be upset about. It makes me very happy. But you've proposed policies like taxing billionaires, Medicare for all, expanding union power. So, I mean, the question comes down to what core values are driving your vision. Why do you believe a more progressive approach is not only necessary right now, but workable, especially given our federal government now?
Yeah. I mean, those are two amazing questions. I'll just address the necessary at first and the workable. And it's hard to see like how some of this is workable. And I totally get that when it's like, we're currently governed by a rich cabal of pedophiles. So it's like, we're not exactly this close to Medicare for all. And I'm not naive. I understand that. Yeah. So why I think it's necessary is so many people, and this is not just like a Zora Mondani thing. This is not just a recency bias. So many people are like, hey, we're like drowning. And the pretend concept of an American dream is very quickly slipping through anyone's fingers.
Right.
I think it's necessary because Donald Trump got elected president twice. And he's a con man. He's a liar. He's a snake oil salesman. Blah, blah, blah. JM, you and I don't need to talk about how bad Donald Trump is. two bitches saying, yeah. But Donald Trump got elected twice as president, lying, but running on a platform that he was gonna help ordinary people. He was going to make the government work for ordinary people.
Yep.
What is the point of government if we're not having government make everyone's lives easier? Like we're not to go like weird and anthropologically, but we gathered into communities like for what purpose? Like right now our government is constantly making, like we are dealing with so much psychic damage from our government on a daily basis.
Right.
We should have a government that is actually making our lives easier, that is lifting us up, that is helping everyone because we own them. We own these bastards. Like, we're paying the taxes. They are working for us, but we keep putting people in charge that do not care about us. So I think it's necessary to approach policy, to approach what the government should be doing with like a loud, proud, unequivocal message. You know, what is the point of moderation here? What is the point of incremental? Donald Trump is president. He became president twice. Like, moderation is for absolute suckers and losers at this point. And I'm not saying that because like, oh, we should dream big because, you know, even a humble asshole like Donald Trump became president. But we should dream big because that's what people need, because they keep voting for liars and cheats and thieves like Donald Trump, who are promising them the world and then stabbing them in the back. And we need to learn that that's what people want from the government, because they're drowning in apathy and a government that does not give a shit about them.
We need a fresh new deal.
We need 100%.
Big ideas and loud voices pushing for progressive change, because it polls well.
Yeah, so, yeah, it polls well. It polls well because people need that, because they're like desperate for something that shows them that that the people that they're voting for give a shit about them.
Yeah,
like I think Democrats, I think that we set Donald Trump up to a piece of shit like him or someone like him to win in 2016.
Yep.
In 2009, when Obama won, we had this huge wave of enthusiasm. Oh, blue wave, you know, it's going to be a bright new future. And then we did nothing to put the bankers who led to the Great Recession in jail. We did nothing to hold accountable the criminals and neocons who dragged us into two wars for billions of dollars and countless lives, American and Iraqi and Afghani lives,
yep,
wasted. We let it all go. And then we had two terms of Obama. So a lot of things changed for the good. A lot of things obviously didn't change for the good. Trump, what did we learn from the first term of Trump? Biden went into office, and then we did the same thing. We didn't actually hold these assholes accountable that are ruining this country. So yeah, we need people who are going, like, I think the reason that I'm so supportive of taxing the rich to, you know, one of the points you mentioned in my policy.
Yeah.
Is for two reasons. One, so that we can have nice things, because people in this country, we are the richest country on the planet. People deserve to have these nice things. We deserve to have, you know, like, Americans deserve affordable healthcare. We deserve affordable housing. We deserve paid parental leave. We should not be, no offense to, I love the country, I've never been there, but we should not be looking at a small country like Denmark and being like, very jealous. they seem to have figured things out. Like, yeah, we have the means, we just don't have people in charge that care. And that's like, that's why I want to be in power. I want to get into elected office. And like, what is the point of these assholes in charge not doing anything to help anyone? Like, just go, like, I look at all these politicians, like Ted Cruz, for example, who's just a career politician at this point. He's not doing anything to help anyone except his like corporate donors. Go away. Just like, go be a lobbyist, go into the private sector. They're holding on to the power because they like the taste of it.
Well, and it's what he's going to end up doing anyway, is either lobbying or some garbage on Fox News. It's like, yeah, you know, be a Jason Chaffetz, retire already, yeah, and go take care of your further career.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's what? Like, you're voting to keep billionaires' taxes high. Like, yeah. And then the other thing I was going to say, and then I'll let you steer me back on track. Was the other thing for why I think we need to tax the rich. One, Americans deserve nice things. And two, if we tax the rich, we take some of the power out of their hands.
Yeah.
Like, money is power. Absolute money is absolute power. So we are controlled. Our government is largely controlled by these rich assholes. Like, this isn't a conspiracy theory. Like, 10% of spending in federal elections is from billionaires these days.
It's it's interesting to watch Mexico. And again, I'm not dumping on a country just because they're there, but they just passed universal health care.
And you got a woman president. So it's like,
oh, she's great. She's wonderful. So
we're living our dreams.
Yeah. So you've answered most of my questions already. So I'm gonna skip down a little bit.
Sorry about that.
No, you're all good. You know, hey, it's good.
But my brain is mostly a ball of yarn. It's just connections firing off.
Hey folks, Jeff here. None of the podcasts on Defenestrate Media were created by a big company or a moneyed network. There's no corporate backing here. The shows, The Left Show, the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I Told You So, exist because we thought that it would be fun to sit down with microphones and talk about the shit that we care about. Politics, comics, culture. Over time, something pretty amazing happened, and a community has formed around these shows. Listeners who come back every week, people who argue with us, laugh with us, send us messages, and share the episodes with friends. Recently, we got a couple of shout outs by some bigger shows, which has reinvigorated interest in what we do here. It means that there's a lot more ears paying attention to the words that we throw out. It's a lot of growth, but growth means that what we've done is sort of hit the limit of what we can do with both the gear we have, the software we use, and the hosting that we've been running now for years. So we're asking for help. We're raising funds to upgrade our podcast hosting. We need a lot more bandwidth. We need two new hard drives for both production and storage. And then we have three pieces of software that we use that cost a bloody fortune annually to build the shows. We've always been listener supported. That's how independent podcasts like this survive. So if the shows have ever made you laugh, made you think, or just kept you company while you were driving somewhere, maybe consider pitching in this round. A few dollars helps when there's a lot of listeners that are a part of it. Look, do us a favor. Navigate yourself over to theleftshow.com, click on that big banner for the spring fundraiser. And we're not just asking for help, we're offering prizes for people that do help. So take a look right there at the bottom of the page. You'll see everything that we're offering for those that come to our rescue. With that in mind, thank you, seriously, for helping to keep independent media alive. What if there was one place where comic book fans could get everything? News, reviews, debates, and deep dives every single week.
And not just we read one issue and Googled the rest kind of takes. We're talking 15 years deep, over 600 episodes.
That's right. The world's greatest comic book podcast has been breaking down Marvel, DC, indie books, movies, and fandom culture long before it was cool.
Whether you're a lifelong collector,
a casual fan who just saw the latest superhero movie,
or someone trying to figure out where to even start,
we have got you covered.
We don't always agree, which makes it way more fun.
Yeah, way more fun.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Real opinions, real conversations.
Zero gatekeeping.
Check out the world's greatest comic book podcast at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hey kids, comics!
I have not only run for office myself, I have run many campaigns for office. I know exactly where you're at. And we can talk about, you know, fun stuff I used to do when I ran campaigns after, because it's not about me. Today's about you. But basically, you're calling for stronger federal protections for LGBTQ plus Americans.
Yep.
You know, is it a moral rights issue for you, a civil rights issue for you? Is it both? You know, what responsibility does Congress have right now to protect all Americans?
I love that question. I am not to be annoying and be lawyerly or politician, but I think it's three things. I think it's a moral rights issue and a civil rights issue. I'll get to my third in a second. But I think morally, like, these people are, they're just trying to live their lives.
Yeah.
So, like, what the bathrooms of today are the lunch counters of the 50s. And, like, the people who are, like, pretending that, oh, like, won't somebody think of the children? I would bet my entire existence that these people would have been back in the 50s screaming at black people to get off out of the lunch counters.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, but I think it's a more, like, we should not be kicking people who are just trying to live their lives. We shouldn't be using the power of the state or individuals kicking down on people who are just trying to live their lives and not, they're not hurting anyone. Like, what is the point of us attacking them? So, like, morally, it's wrong. It's repugnant. These people are just trying to live their lives, not hurting anyone. They're not doing anything to anyone. And just like, not to, I don't know, this maybe sounds bad, but if you look at our society, it's not like it's easy to be, for example, transgender. Okay. They're not like, you're not a transgender person and people are like, would you like an easy life? Here's some money. Here's a check. Like, that's who they want. That's who they are. That's who they want to be authentically. They want to live their lives. They don't get an advantage from doing that.
No.
Maybe it sounds offensive, but they're at a disadvantage because our, like, being just authentically who they are. But that's because our society sucks and we treat people who are different in shitty ways. And so, yeah, our government shouldn't be a force of like oppression and, you know, hatred towards them. So, and then as a civil rights issue, I think if you're willing to compromise on protecting, you know, let's go real high level here, protecting same-sex marriage, for example.
Sure.
If you're willing to compromise on that, you are willing to compromise on anything. You would sacrifice the rights of anyone. And I do think like civil rights on these things, it's like a line in the sand. It's like the Yosemite Sam and the Bugs Bunny thing, like don't cross this line. Like, I think it has to be just no excuses, no at all. Like, we defend LGBTQ rights, we defend same-sex marriage, like we defend, you know, gender-affirming care, things like that. If you're willing to step back and let someone's rights be taken away, you're willing to let anyone's rights be taken away.
Yeah, I've long. If you're going to make rights conditional, they're no longer rights.
Yeah, they're privileges.
Yeah.
And it's like that very much is in this country. And one of the things, and this is completely unrelated, so I won't pivot to it because that's annoying when politicians do it, but the way that voting is treated in our country, like voting is very much treated like a privilege in our country. And we allow states to put these barriers and voter ID and bullshit. And we treat voting as a privilege. And that kind of stuff freaks me out because it's like, okay, so voting is supposed to be the sacred thing, but we constantly have elected officials scaling back on that. Like, we're turning civil rights into civil privileges in this country.
Absolutely.
Oh, and then the third thing I was going to say of why I'm so supportive of that is, like, just, like, leave these people alone, you freaks. Like, it's like at a human level, at a completely unrelated to, like, government. It's just, like, it literally, nothing in my life changes because somebody wants to get gender change surgery. Nothing in my life changes because someone comes out as gay. Like, leave these people alone, you absolute freaks. It does not negatively impact my life in any way, shape, or form. So I have no idea why so many freaks in our government are so obsessed with it. So, yeah.
I mean, I think it's a feeder issue. And
yeah.
I mean, when you look at Utah politics, we've got people like Gail Razika that spend more time thinking about gay sex than gay people do. And and they get twisted and they get weird. And they build their little phone trees and they call up these other Republicans, and it's 10 nosy, you know, members of a neighborhood that are just out for blood to have whatever they want and what they think. And then they lobby for it. And the problem that I think we have with this on a congressional level is how much money gets spent by people that feel this way. I mean, it's like back in the old, you know, Roman Empire. I have told this one many times, so for regular listeners, just buckle in. It's short, but you know, it's if a Roman citizen was accosted on a road, Rome would respond. It didn't matter who they were. It didn't matter how tall or short they were. It didn't matter if they were, you know, gay or not. If they were and I remember when. And this is American exceptionalism. I absolutely own it. But when an American would get hurt on foreign land, that would lead the news. And now something happens and you get the, well, are they gay? Are they trans? Are they Democrat? Are they Republican? Let's quantify before we, you know, we report. I miss, and I say this as a guy who remembers when Ronald Reagan got elected, funny aside, we did my little fifth grade, we voted, and there was one vote for Jimmy Carter, and It was me.
That's also basically how the country went. So.
Oh, I know. Okay, so you've said, and I agree, we're the richest country in the world, and we should be investing more in people. So do you see your campaign as sort of a broader progressive movement to help shape the Democratic Party and get its head out of its ass, you know? Or are you just focused on just running and getting there? Do you have future plans if you win?
Sorry, what was the last part?
Oh, do you have future plans if you win?
Yeah. I mean, I want to get in there and I want to bend the shape of the Democratic Party. Like, I think that, you know, if I may be so bold, but I look at, you know, AOC and I look at folks like her, you know, obviously Zohran's an exceptional example of a great politician, but he's not in Congress, but to point to someone who I would aspire to be like in office and messaging would be AOC. Like, and she has, you know, to use the way too often used term, shifted the Overton window. But I think to use another, you know, vague metaphor as to what it means, you know, bending the moral arc of the Democratic Party.
Right.
I think like I look back at, you know, 2009, we had, you know, we started that year with 60 Democratic senators and we couldn't get a public option. And it's like, you know, Jesus, real bad that we had that many corporate Democrats and we had that many members of Congress that were, you know, quote unquote Democrat and quote unquote, you know, the party of the working people, working class, and they were in the pocket of big pharma. And so I want to get in there and I'm running as a Democrat. I'm a proud Democrat. I'm a New Deal Democrat. FDR is the best president we've ever had. You know, I guess slash Lincoln depends on your flavor of the day. But I think going in there and if we could replace every single member of the House with AOC and every single senator with, you know, but with a way more liberal, we need more liberal voices in Congress. And I want to get into Congress and I want to drive that wagon, but I also want to help, you know, help bring other folks up who are trying to run for office, whether here in Utah, like locally. I want to lift those voices up because we need more. We don't just need more Democrats. That's not what we need.
No.
Because my point that I was trying to get to, and sometimes I miss it, but my point was in 2009, we had a lot of Democrats, but a lot of them were bad. A lot of them were centrist Democrats, vaguely Republican. You know, Joe Lieberman, isn't he a registered? Didn't he become a registered Republican? But we had people like that were quote unquote Democrats. And it's like, that's not what we need. It'd be great if we had a lot of Democrats, but we need actual liberal Democrats, actual ones that are progressive, that hold those progressive values, that give a shit about ordinary people. Because I think that's really the line for politicians, for elected officials. It's not Democrat, it's not Republican. It's, do you give a shit about ordinary people or do you not? And JM, I don't know if you've looked, but the people who do not are currently winning by quite a lot.
Oh yeah.
So I want to get in office as someone who's running as, yes, I'm a Democrat, the D will be next to my name, but I give a shit about you. I want to get in office. I don't need this. Like, no, these people who are in office, again, like, just get a private sector job if you don't want to help people. Like, go be a lobbyist. I don't understand. And I know there's, you're like, well, obviously, Michael, they want it for the power, but it's like, what is the point? Go away. Like, if you're not going to be in office to help people, you should just get the hell out of there. I want to get in there.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that I was reading on your page earlier. The no stock trades for Congress.
Yep.
Because I think that a lot of the bad elements we see, both with Republicans and corporate Democrats, is they have found a money making machine. And in as long as that's there, we're gonna keep attracting headaches. You know, yeah. I want my Star Trek future. That's what I want. But instead we're in the back catalog of the canon and we're coming up on our World War III moment. And it's like, you know, Gene Roddenberry mapped this out. We can skip the bullshit and move forward into we're the only industrialized nation on the planet without, you know, healthcare for all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not that hard to figure out. It's, you know what? A lot of folks that work at insurance companies are going to end up working for the government.
Yeah.
It's a jobs program.
jobs program. Yeah.
Yeah. All it means is that there's 15 billionaires that own insurance companies, hospitals, ambulances, and all of these other, you know, intermixed things. All these conflicts of interest go away.
Yeah, we can put them on a plane and send them to Epstein's Island. They can stay there.
Nice. You know? That's absolutely it. Well, hey, man, do me a favor here. We're kind of at the end, but just give me your oorah speech. Give me a pep talk. What's it going to look like when you get elected and you get there? Kind of give me your closing elevator speech.
Yeah, give you a pep talk after we talk about how dark everything is. Yeah, so, you know, the primary is June 23rd. The field, I think I'm the only real progressive voice in the field right now who, we didn't even talk about stuff with Nate, but you have other folks who are in there who are career politicians, who are lobbyists. Like, I am running as a true progressive voice. I'm running because I want to help people. I don't need to do this. You know, I think a lot of people just live in office. People can surmise who I'm talking about here. But I'm going to get in office. We're going to hit the ground running in January. I will be putting forth piecemeal pieces of legislation to help working people. And I will make Republicans and corporate Democrats vote it down. Like, day one, $20 minimum wage tied to inflation. That's going to be on the floor.
Yep.
I want to see you vote it down. Like, I want to see these rich a-holes in office who don't care about ordinary people think $7.25 an hour is okay. I want to see them vote it down. And if they do, then we're going to name them, we're going to shame them, we're going to chase them, we're going to keep introducing that bill until we get it through, because that is the job of a legislator, is to legislate and to help people. So yeah, I'm going to hit the ground running with piecemeal pieces of legislation, not like this, you know, what does Congress do these days? They pass omnibus legislation and then they go on vacation for 6 months. So we're going to do piecemeal pieces of legislation to help people, tax the rich, raise minimum wage, affordable housing. And I'm going to be investigating a lot of the corruption that we've seen in our government. Like, I'm going to just scratch and claw to get onto oversight committees.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because first of all, that'll be very fun. I will be frank. The amount of corruption that I'll be busy. I'll be working. You know, I'll be working 25 hours a day investigating the corruption of Trump. Yes, of Republicans. Yes, but I am not at all. It's not a partisan issue, as we were talking about with the congressional stock trading issue. Like, we have a lot of folks in office, both sides of the aisle, that have made a lot of money off of, you know, using insider knowledge.
I think we proved this week that when we do root out bad Democrats, you know, we run them off.
Yeah, absolutely. We've done it.
We've done it for years, but yeah, you're right. I mean, there's still corporate Democrats up there. They're still finding ways to game the system. And I want one that serves with more altruism, you know, than personal gain. That's what I like.
Yeah, because if you look at the policy platform generally of the national GOP, how are we losing to these guys? And the reason we're losing to these guys is because the Democrats who get in office, they completely check out on actually trying to help people when they get there. They start cashing their checks. They start taking their AIPAC money. They don't care. So yeah, it's not Democrat Republican for me. I'm a Democrat. I'm a proud New Deal Democrat. For me, it's, are you going to be accountable to people? Are you going to do things for people? Are you going to give shit? And are you not? And, you know, out of 435 members of the House, it's probably a lot more who don't care. And yeah, so I'm going to get in there. We're going to fight for working class interests. And, you know, I'm not going to fight to make calls to rich people to raise money. That's not what I'm going to be fighting for when I'm in Congress. And I think a lot of my opponents in this race, that's what they're going to be fighting for. They're going to be fighting to make it to the phones so they can call the rich donors and get more money to stay in office. To do what? I don't know. I'm going to be fighting every single day to advance working class interests and to help people and to make their lives better, because that's what the point of government should be.
That's the job.
Yeah.
That's the job.
Yeah, exactly.
Outstanding, brother. We are at the end of our time. Thank you very much for joining me on the show this week. I'm going to try. Yeah. I've reached out to a few of you guys running in the primary. You're the first one that's got the stones to come and be on the show.
First and best.
Let's call it. Let's go ahead and we'll call it right now. First is best.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much, Dave. I wanted to do the little, Michael Farrell running for the Democratic primary in Utah's first congressional district. If you want to check out, go to my website. It's michaelforutah.com. Just sign up on there, volunteer, help out, spread the word, donate whatever you can. Any little bit helps in running a grassroots campaign against some corporate donated and bought opponents. So anything, I'll give you help.
Give me the website one more time.
Yeah, it's michaelforutah.com.
And that's the word for and not a number.
Yeah. Michael, the word for Utah.com.
I work in, like I said, I've done campaign management and all of that, but I mostly work in advertising. And I always think that if you put a number in your name when you're running for office, I can't take you seriously. So I was very happy to see your website.
Yeah. Because you do that and it looks a little bit more like an AOL handle.
Yes. That's it. Exactly. Outstanding. All right, buddy. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Of course. Thanks, Jamie. I appreciate yours.
You bet.
If you've made it this far, you might as well join us on Patreon. Patreon.com/DFenMedia. This episode and more always available at www.theleftshow.com.